Joseph Quinn.
Do you remember when, like, every teenager was obsessed with him after the...
Yes.
And it was, like, weird. Like, people were, like, crying over him.
Yeah.
What was his character's name in Stranger Things?
Eddie Munson.
Eddie. Yeah, because remember there were TikToks where the girls would be crying. They're like, I just feel like Eddie was so special.
Yeah. I forgot that he was Eddie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Ride Home Podcast. My name is Abby.
Hey, guys, it's Caitlin.
We're back to the OG way of starting the episode. We are
back to the original format.
Yes. I'm just going to dive in and say that, like, we can't really do a review of this movie without a decent amount of spoilers.
Mm.
So we are going to just straight up say this will have spoilers in this episode. So if you have not seen A Quiet Place Day One yet, go check it out. Or if you don't care about spoilers, stick around with us.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously the third installment of the Quiet Place series, which I think he originated the idea, John Krasinski. I know he, like, wrote and directed the first two.
Okay.
But I guess he came up with the idea also.
I'm assuming.
So he came up with this world. Okay. We need to do more research about the backstory of A Quiet Place.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
But the interesting part about this third installment is that it is a prequel,
mm-hmm.
and B, directed by someone else, not John Krasinski.
Uh-huh.
But this movie is directed by Michael Sarnowski, who I don't know.
No.
Never heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
So your guess is as good as ours.
Yeah, I just did a quick goog of him and he's not done a whole lot.
I wonder if he's just like knows just John and like kind of, I feel like in a way it was maybe like a figurehead thing where John Krasinski was probably like way too busy to actually direct this, but like they got the green light and just ran with it and maybe like directed through this guy. I don't know. I am speculating.
Who's
entirely.
To say?
Who is to say?
Yeah.
But Quiet Place 1 and 2, which star John Krasinski and his wife, Emily Blunt, which obviously the second one is just her. But I love those movies and I think they are the right touch of like scary and claustrophobic and fear and horror, but also obviously that heartfelt kind of family aspect. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you can definitely see that like John Krasinski is a little bit made out of pudding. Like,
yeah,
the man has a lot of feelings
he
and
sure
you can
does.
Tell he does.
Yeah.
But Emily Blunt, I thought in those first two movies was magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
She gave her all in both of those performances.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I actually genuinely was a little bit sad that like, we wouldn't see her in this.
Yeah.
We actually do see that family's day one. Because we see them at the baseball game and then we see the alien invasion start in their town specifically. So we technically have already seen their day one.
Sure.
But this film puts us in day one of this alien invasion in the heart of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to give us a quick Google synopsis and cast list for Quiet Place Day One?
When New York City comes under attack from an alien invasion, a woman and other survivors try to find a way to safety. They soon learn that they must remain absolutely silent as the mysterious creatures are drawn to the slightest sound. And this movie stars Lupita Nyong'o, Alex Wolff, and Joseph Quinn are the main cast and characters.
Seeing Alex Wolff with like a giant beard was shocking.
Yeah, very. Like, I like almost didn't recognize
him. Yeah, I still just picture him as like Hereditary. Like it's just, he's like glued in my mind as the kid in Hereditary. So seeing him with like this big beard and long hair, I was like, oh wow, like you look like a grown man and also completely different.
A different person altogether. Yes.
So this one, obviously, you and I, going into it, I remember I made a comment to you where I was like, oh, this is going to be like a disaster movie, kind of, because like just day one, alien invasion, New York City. It's kind of all of the elements of a disaster movie coming together, because like, what's a disaster movie without being in New York?
It's not.
If it's not New York, it's L.A. Like,
yeah,
we got to see one of them blow up.
And one of the coasts.
One of them's got to go.
Yeah.
So we went and rolled with New York City on this one.
If anyone loves disaster movies, It's me. And also you.
Yeah.
You love a disaster movie.
I love a disaster movie so much so that I enjoyed Moonfall, which might be my most controversial film opinion ever. Because
possibly, yeah.
No one likes Moonfall.
No one likes Moonfall.
I
liked it.
It was so much fun. It's stupid.
It's dumb.
You know
what
I mean?
That's kind of the point of disaster movies.
Yes.
But I think this is probably why you like the Quiet Place installments, is that it's like a disaster movie, but like, if it was a good movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was like actually a good film.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that you were particularly excited for this prequel, to see it, experience it. So we're going to flip the script again on you guys.
Oh my God.
And I am actually curious to know, what are your initial thoughts and feelings about Quiet Place Day One?
Sometimes I try in like the theater to get a read on like your reaction to a movie, like while I'm watching, I'm like also kind of peeking at you. And I'm very curious to just, I'm guessing or I'm asking, like, do you have an idea of what I'm going to say?
No.
Like, you don't have a guess of my reaction?
No.
This is totally blind.
Yeah.
Okay. I hated everything about this movie until about the last 15 minutes.
Okay. I felt the same way.
Okay.
So glad you said that.
Okay. Without fail, we'll go to war to defend the Oscar that Frodo the Cat deserves.
Can we take a minute to talk about Frodo the Cat?
We can, and we will.
I've done a little bit of research about him.
Oh my God. You looked up Frodo the Cat. Tell me
I
about
looked
him.
Up.
Tell me about him.
Okay, this is crazy. This is from Google, okay? This is from a Wall Street Journal article. The role of Frodo was actually performed by two felines.
Oh my God.
Schnitzel! And Nico.
Nico!
With 12 weeks of preparation and the incentive of cheesy treats, and without help from computer-generated stand-ins.
Dude, and you can tell, too.
Yeah.
Like, that is a cat through the whole movie.
It's Schnitzel. It's two cats,
Schnitzel and Nico. I wonder if one is, like, the action guy and the other is, like,
one
the
is
cuddle
One is, like,
bug.
The running one and one is, yeah.
Yeah, because there was, oh, my God, that cat. One of the cats, I don't know if it's both of them or one of them, but, like, the one that's, like, cuddly, that would let people, like, hold him and squeeze him.
Oh.
His eyes would blink. And like, as cat owners, we know what cats look like when they actually like are like, you know, happy.
And when they're like just
cozy.
Being warm and cuddly.
Yeah. And he, like, you can tell that like he wasn't being forced to be hugged and held.
Yeah.
Which was very, I don't know why, like sometimes like animal actors, especially cats, like people will be holding them and you'll see them like wiggling.
Yes.
And it's like, you can tell they want to get out of this person's clutches.
Yeah.
But whichever one, Nico or Schnitzel, whichever one was the cuddler was so sweet and so perfect. And whoever was the runner was an absolute fucking adventurer.
The running one was absolutely precious.
Every single scene that he was on the screen, which was a lot.
He was the actual star.
He was the only thing I was watching.
Yeah. I felt like I couldn't fully enjoy him. Because there was so much tension. Like, sensory-wise, that I was, like, constantly on the edge of my seat and, like, on, like, the verge of, like, nervy kind of thing. So I felt like I couldn't really be like, oh, it's a cute cat. Because, like, the whole time I was just like, when's an alien coming? Like, I felt like it was just, like, a lot of, like, heightened senses, I guess.
See, which is interesting because that's actually my biggest pet peeve with this movie, is that it was not scary. To me.
Okay, I didn't think it was scary.
Yeah.
I just felt like there was a lot of tension.
Yeah. My whole thing with like the first two was that they did such a like masterful job of setting the scene and making you feel almost like if you personally, while you're watching this movie, make noise, you're gonna die.
Yes.
And in this one, it just felt like, I don't know, like the tension didn't feel built to me. It felt really empty. It felt drawn out. It felt also really unrealistic and unbelievable, which like in the first two, I felt like they did a good job of showing us how this family actually survived. And in this one, it was like, I mean, I love Frodo the cat, but like he would have died like 800 times. Yeah. Like he would have died. He would have died when the bus blew up
immediately.
And so for me, even though I loved Frodo and I thought he was the cutest little thing and I was watching it the whole time, I almost felt like it was like his presence was compensating for like how shitty of a movie this was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Where do we start?
I don't know if John Krasinski wrote this script. I haven't done the research for it, but I do know I saw a story by John Krasinski.
Uh-huh.
This was the most melodramatic bullshit, and it felt like a Hallmark movie and a disaster movie came together.
Mm-hmm.
Because literally the whole point of this movie was that this woman dying of cancer doesn't really care that aliens have arrived,
mm-hmm.
because all she wants is to eat a piece of pizza before she dies from her favorite pizza place where she grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And there are layers that we get to later on in the film.
Which we'll get to that.
But until you get to those layers, everything feels so melodramatic and like cutesy and weird. And for a movie that's about aliens ripping humans to pieces, mm-hmm. if you even so much as like step on a piece of glass,
mm-hmm.
the tone felt so strange.
The tone was weird. And like the whole entire movie, all I could think was, why the fuck does this lady need pizza so bad? Where does she think she's going to find pizza while the world is like ending? Like the whole city is being infiltrated by aliens.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings and everything around you is crumbling. And like this whole like idea that she needs this pizza from this one particular place in Brooklyn or Harlem. Sorry.
Harlem. Yeah.
It was just like they didn't explain it, like you said, until the last 20 minutes
literally
of the movie.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, now I feel like an asshole.
I know.
For like judging her. But like it just didn't make sense at all. Uh-uh. Also, why was he with her?
His character made no sense to me because he basically appears out of the subway and is just like, you know,
Frodo sees him.
Yeah. And it's basically his only setup that we know is that he's in America by himself studying to be a law student.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically like he has no one. Like he doesn't have family. He's by himself in this situation who clings to Lupita's character, Sam. Mm-hmm. And so like Sam and Eric have this weird thing going on where like she's like, stop following me, and like he's like,
but like genuinely, why is he following her?
And obviously they can't talk because of these aliens, but it's really uncomfortable watching him just like lurk behind her.
Yeah.
And then in a very, very short period of time, this man who is set up to have extreme anxiety,
mm-hmm.
just like decides he's gonna go out by himself to get her medicine.
Correct.
Which you couldn't tell me that that character would do that.
No. And that's the thing is like, we're meant to believe that somehow they have forged this bond.
Yeah.
That now he cares about her and he's going to get her medicine. But I'm like, when did they forge this bond?
Like suddenly
nothing happened. Like genuinely the whole plot of his character was so irrelevant.
It was just following her around, and then she was unconscious for half of it, so they weren't getting to know each other. There wasn't like this moment of like them spending like 2 weeks together, like holed up somewhere. It was literally like the first 2 days.
And it also didn't appear to be any sort of a romantic connection.
It kind of like teetered on it when they got to the bar, whenever he was like,
okay,
doing the whole like fake magic performance, which like gag me with a spoon.
Ew.
It was okay. Like it was so cheesy. And the only reason I will say that like I did like a little bit like shed a tear, like I wasn't like full crying, but I just like shed a tear. I'm a sucker for a self-sacrifice moment in mm-hmm. a movie. Like one of my favorite movies from childhood is The Iron Giant, and like the moment where he like, you know, launches and says like Superman, like my heart instantly like shatters mm-hmm. in that type of moment. But I will say the issue with that was that knowing that this woman had terminal cancer
mm-hmm.
from the beginning mm-hmm. ruined her self-sacrifice, for me. Mm-hmm. It should have been something that we found out along the way. Like, she should have just been, you know, at this performance or whatever. We could have gotten like this kind of general sense of this Alex Wolff's character who was her nurse. Mm-hmm. She could have said that Frodo was her therapy cat, and we still would have, like, I wouldn't have thought hospice.
No, patient. I would have thought like mental health. I would therapy. Have,
exactly. And so my idea or concept that would make this film better, I would have thought it was way cooler, or would have been way cooler, if Joseph Quinn's character didn't know that she had terminal cancer, mm-hmm. even like up to the point of him getting on the boat, mm-hmm. because it would have felt like such like a bigger moment.
Yeah.
I will say though that once things kind of kicked into gear and there were those action sequences where like hundreds of aliens were scaling the roof of the buildings and shit like that, I enjoyed that. I mean, I'm a sucker for that shit. And so that plus their final like route to the dock was fun and interesting and cool and, you know, got my heart rate up and all of those things. But again,
it took us the whole time.
It felt so long.
It did feel really long.
The pacing was awful.
Yeah.
The script was bad. The pacing was awful.
And for this to be a prequel.
Yeah.
They didn't do a very good job of showing how we figured out.
Yeah.
That the aliens are triggered by sound.
I feel like they just kind of like let the people figure out that just suddenly. Like they're like,
yeah,
oh yeah, they're attacking everything that has sound. Well, you don't know if it's like movement or sound.
Like, yeah, like all of a sudden everyone knew.
Yeah.
But then like some people didn't and were just like screaming in the streets like idiots. So I was just like, what? Like when I think about a prequel, I'm expecting there to be like a little bit of like origination of how and why and what. And I just feel like it just sort of didn't explain it at all.
No.
Like what the aliens were doing and why they're triggered by sound, or how the people figured out it was triggered by sound. It was just like the explosion or whatever was started happening. The aliens started invading. Cut to all of these people holed up in this theater.
Silent.
Being silent because somehow they've already found out. Like, huh?
It doesn't make any.
None of it made sense.
It didn't make sense. And I feel like they were trying to almost skip over the parts that would have made it interesting to get to this sappy sucker story about Lupita's character. And you could have, again, you could have had an element of that in there. And it could have been almost like a relief of finding out that she had terminal cancer, where it's, you know, with John Krasinski's character in the first one sacrificing himself, there's no relief. It just sucks. No. Like, you're just like, holy shit, like this man just sacrificed himself for his family. And there could have been a change up from that other one where it's like, oh my God, we find out like, okay, she had like terminal cancer. Like, it makes sense, like whatever. But just the whole, like, that whole storyline with her cancer, her dying, especially being so melodramatic and serious. I thought her death was the most gimmicky. And, like, the way that they did it with the, and I'm feeling good, while the alien lands, I was like, are you making a fucking joke out of that? Like, it felt like a joke, but
that felt weird.
It felt the tone was weird. There was this whole thing of her like talking about like how much she loves the city, but like, I'm blabbering. Get me off this soapbox. I'm tired.
Take the microphone away. Here's the thing. This movie irritated me and confused me. And pissed me off like for the first 75% of this movie. And then when I found out the reason why she wanted to get pizza at this particular place was because this is where her and her dad went when she was a little kid. Then I just started crying.
Right.
And then I couldn't stop crying. because for those of you who don't know, my dad just passed away. And so it was just like one of those ones where it was just like, oh, man. And so I kind of feel like because I had like an emotional connection with her on that and like her connection to wanting to go to this specific pizza place. And also like knowing what I know about when people pass, like they want foods from their childhood and stuff. Like I thought that was really cool, but it didn't really make sense that we didn't find that out until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Like nothing about the timing, like you said, the pacing and, and the plot made any sense at all.
No.
But I connected with that just like from like my own personal experiences. Right. But like, I don't think having that experience with it and like connecting it, like, and, you know, feeling like I could relate to that character in some ways, it still didn't,
it didn't make the movie good for you.
No.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like, oh, like sometimes I can be blinded by my emotions, you know? Yeah. And I just, I still just feel like,
I feel like you just got kind of like poked in your feelings in that one specific scene.
Yeah.
And the floodgates opened because you were thinking about like your own experience with your dad, but it wasn't necessarily that like the movie itself brought you to that emotion. It was literally just like,
it literally was
just like a bug in your ear,
literally
almost.
Because she said my dad, I think she said he died and just like I'm dying now or something, and just her saying that and then when she finds the picture of her and her dad at the thing, like all of those things just like, you know, hit bubbled. my own grief bone. But like other than that though, like that's irrelevant to the movie, you know, and it didn't make it a good movie at all. In fact, I almost feel like it made the movie worse.
Yep.
Because you can't throw something like that at us in the last 20 minutes of a movie and expect us to be like, man, what a great story and what a great character she was. And like it just doesn't work.
I also really struggle with characters who are designed like her. And I'm trying to think of other characters like her where we have seen this like kind of archetype before, where it's like almost like a monotone character. Mm-hmm. They speak under their breath. They're a little bit edgy and scrappy.
They have walls up.
It just feels like a throwaway.
I was going to say, it feels like an easy way out.
Yeah.
Feels like an easy way to not develop someone's character.
Right. And which, like, when you cast someone like Lupita, you have an actor who is capable of delivering a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like Joseph Quinn acted better than Lupita in this.
Yeah.
Which is saying something because, like, he's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I connected more to his character as, like, an actual person than she ever connected to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Her whole character felt throwaway. And honestly, like the whole script with you saying like it kind of like bumped at your grief bone, is it almost felt like it was like a metal detector on a beach to try to find feelings in the movie, where it was like they were just like kind of like swiping around, like, is this going to make them cry? Is this going to make them cry? Oh, maybe this will make them cry. Oh, maybe this will make us connect to them. Oh, maybe this will work. And it felt like they were just like trying to dig at all these different points. I felt like I was getting like punched in multiple places of my body the whole time. I was like, guys, slow down.
Yeah. And I feel
that's like enough slices.
I feel like they wouldn't have had to do that if they just wrote good characters.
Yep.
If they wrote characters who were real people who we could relate to, who were human. And like you said, she was not relatable at all.
Period.
Because like you said, she was just like figured everything out and just kind of went about her business. And it was like, why are we following her?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Aliens invaded New York City and y'all picked this bitch for us to follow.
Yeah.
And like, she has cancer, really? Like,
I was more interested in the guy with his son. Like, I was.
Yeah. Like, what are they about?
Yeah.
And like, that's the thing is like, I don't understand the writing of this movie at all. Mm-hmm. Like, because I didn't really even feel like I could relate to the Joseph Quinn guy's character.
I will say that, like, probably one of my favorite parts in the entire movie was that father and son, which was that moment when a man is having basically a panic attack. And in order to stop him from screaming and killing himself, his son, and everybody on this rooftop, the man that they were with basically like smacks his head off the back of this like brick wall. And he has this moment of like, oh my God. And he says like, I'm sorry to the guy who's like dead. And I thought that moment is like what you get out of an apocalyptic disaster that is elevated and gives you those human emotions. Is like, I'm protecting my son right now, but that means I just killed somebody.
I was gonna say, that was probably the most human, authentic moment in the entire movie.
Yes.
Because he knew his son was there. He was holding his hand over this guy's mouth to try and muffle his scream. And he, you could see in that moment, like, he is struggling. Like, he doesn't know what else to do to prevent this guy from screaming. He knows his kid. It's like an extremely, like, tense moment of, like, what are you gonna do?
That was the best scene in the movie.
Truly. And, like... He does that just out of instinct. And in that moment, I even thought to myself, like, it's crazy what people do to survive.
Yes.
And like, this really is survival of the fittest. And that was pretty early on in the movie. So I still kind of had some hope that like we were going to get more of that, more of those moments where we see, I mean, I'm sorry, but like the fucking Walking Dead does a better job of that than this movie
did. Yeah, 1,000%.
Like that's, I think, what's so missing from this movie. And what's sad to me, because A Quiet Place 1 and 2 was filled with those moments.
Yep.
Was filled with those moments. And even like from the kids' perspectives, from the mom's perspective, you know, in the first one, John Krasinski is the dad, like, and the kind of, you know, patriarch of this family. You see all of these little glimpses of humanity and sort of just see like how a situation like this of extreme terror and ultimate like survival of the fittest, like how people conduct themselves and how they live their lives and how they go about their day. And it just, this wasn't that. And I'm just so disappointed, you know, because I also was very excited to see this because I loved both of the Quiet Place movies as well. And I feel this is just such a missed opportunity because
it was a letdown for sure.
I almost feel like maybe we shouldn't do prequels anymore.
No, don't go that crazy.
You don't think?
I'm fine with a prequel. Like, prequels can be really good.
But we have to do them well.
Yes. Think about, like, Furiosa. Like, we loved Furiosa.
We
like,
did
you can
love
make,
Furiosa.
You can make a good prequel.
Yes, you can.
And you can also make a good origin story, like Civil War. Like,
yeah.
Which, obviously, Civil War is in its own bubble. But it gave us a good, like... building this world, telling us what happened. You got backstory, you got like pieces of each character's life and where they came from and what they brought to this situation. And I feel like in the first Quiet Place, it was interesting because like they did have a deaf daughter. And so this family was basically like built for this shit. Like, because they can communicate with their hands and like, basically only families with, you know, a deaf family member or people who know sign language would be able to like successfully communicate on a regular basis. So it like was a little bit of a gimmick, but it made sense that they would have survived
like an
this.
Upper hand. Yes.
And this one was just empty of any of the things that made the first two great. And it was also empty of any of the things that make a prequel great. So I think that is where the issue lies with this. And I'm just going to go ahead and say my popcorn score and say small.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I would recommend anyone to see this personally.
No, and I'm honestly shocked. Like, the tomato meter is 85%. Because why?
I don't know. I don't know. I would love to hear an opinion of someone who liked this movie.
Me too.
So if you have seen this and you liked it, please comment on our Instagram post for this episode, because I really want to get like different perspectives on this, because I really was having a hard time with this one. But I feel like, I don't know, people were probably just suckers for like the very like over poetic voiceover and
yeah.
I'm sure there are people who loved that magic scene. I'll pass.
I would rather never see anything like that ever again.
I'll tell you one thing. The kids in our theater that were high out of their minds were not interested in this movie as well.
Nope.
So they left multiple times.
Yep.
I kind of wanted to also.
Yeah.
But we stuck it out.
We stuck it out.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode. I apologize for us just like absolutely ripping this movie to shreds, but I hope that if you did love this movie, we don't judge you for loving
no,
it.
Like, not at all.
It didn't hit with us. It mm-mm. could possibly hit with you. I just personally wouldn't suggest like spending money on this mm-mm. because I'm sure it'll be streaming very soon. Just watch it at home.
Yeah.
Enjoy not paying for this.
And enjoy Frodo.
Yeah.
It's worth it for Frodo.
For Schnitzel.
Schnitzel and Nico.
Schnitzel and Nico.
We love them.
We love them. All right, everybody. We'll keep up with when our next episode will be on our Instagram. And until then, we hope you have a lovely 4th of July. And please do not blow up your hands.
Please be careful. Don't step on a sparkler. I did that one time. It hurts really bad. Thanks for joining us on the ride home.